Hello and welcome to the Tantra for Gay Men podcast, hosted by Jason and Ingo Tantra. Here we're exploring spirituality and personal growth through the practice of Tantra, the body, energy and sex. Hello there, I'm Jason Tantra and welcome to episode 3 of the Tantra for Gay Men podcast with beautiful Ingo Tantra and beautiful me, Jason Tantra. In this podcast, we are going to be talking about why is sexual energy a key component of the practice of Neo-Tantra? Why is sexual energy a key component of the practice of Neo-Tantra? We're going to be exploring what Neo-Tantra is, and we're going to talk about different perspectives around that topic. Also, stay to the end because we have a special gift for you where we are talking about our first book recommendation. And you'll need to listen all the way through to hear that. And also at the end, we're talking about the beloved Tantra Love Festival, which is happening in Glastonbury in UK in August. So yeah, really hope you enjoy this podcast. Enjoy. Here we are, my beloved, episode 3. We've made it through the first 2 episodes, and here we are in episode 3. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm really, really excited about today's topic.
Okay. I'm just loving your smile and looking into your beautiful eyes and adoring you in this moment. And just loving you.
Is it everyday life or is it already Tantra?
So do you want me to tell you what today's topic is?
Yes, absolutely.
But I'm just admiring your beautiful brown eyes and your beautiful smile. Just loving you for a moment. Even though we maybe wanted to murder each other 5 minutes ago, setting up for this. It's a game of two halves. It's both sides of the coin. So today's topic, Ingo, the question is, why is sexual energy such a key core part of neo-tantric practice? Let me just repeat that for everybody. Why is sexual energy a key part of the practice of neo-tantra? Where do we want to start with that?
I could start. I could happily start.
Okay, go for it.
Well, I could happily start. And where do I begin? Because again, this opens just this can of worms that mm-hmm. Tantra is. There are so many dimensions to this question and so many perspectives, you know, how to answer this question. Let me start with the 3 things in there. It's like sexual, it's like energy, and it's neo-tantra. And mm-hmm. to understand what we're actually talking about, I would like to depart from the last one. The word neo-tantra.
Yes.
Which...
That's a really helpful thing to do.
Yeah, we need some context.
Because there's
a
difference between tantra and neo-tantra.
Absolutely. So many people haven't heard of this. They, you know, because we call our work tantra, because neo-tantra for gay men, what would that sound like? But actually...
A car. It could sound like a car advert.
So very broadly speaking and very, you know, simplified, mm-hmm. there are 2 things. There is what we call classical tantra mm-hmm. or traditional tantra, which is basically, let's call it, you know, a spiritual movement mm. that originated on what today is Northern India and swept across that region mm-hmm. circa 6th to 12th century, heyday maybe 10th, 11th century. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about the details in some other episodes. But what I want to say today is that the idea behind that, and, you know, dear listener, if you're listening to this, maybe close your eyes for a few seconds and take that idea in. The idea behind that is that each one of us, no matter who you are, no matter where you come from, no matter what your sexuality is, each of us can realize their true nature, their full potential, awakening, fusing with the cosmos, whatever you know, you want to call this, each one of us can realize that in this very life.
Mm-hmm.
And there are very clear techniques, mainly meditation techniques,
mm-hmm.
To achieve that. And interestingly, you know, already in classical tantra, many of these meditation techniques use, again, you know, to very much simplify it, what I would call spiritual physiology.
Uh-huh.
Many of us know some of these things if you practice yoga, when you think, okay, there are certain energy channels in your body, there are mm-hmm. certain energy centers in your body, and we can actually, there's such a thing as an energy body that you can work with.
Mm-hmm.
And when we work with these things, we don't just work on the mind, we actually work very much with the body. And the idea behind there is to, let's say, manipulate as a positive thing, to manipulate those energetic centers, structures in a way that is conducive for universal energy to run through, that connects us to the cosmos that we are, because in this view, we are not separate from, you know, what we call nature versus human. That's not two different things. That's actually one seamless continuum of phenomena. And to work with our energy channels, we can actually connect that, and then things can run through, and that then leads to all of those things that we experience in meditation and all these ecstatic experiences, which are not the destination, but which ultimately lead to something, to this awakening kind of thing. So if you are, you know, if you are, dear listener, if you are versed in traditional tantra, this is obviously very, very, very simplified and not at all a complete or you know, a faithful rendering of traditional tantra, but just for those, you know, if you don't know these ideas, just keep this idea in mind. There is something that can be realized in this very life, that awakening. And to do this in tantra, we need to engage the body, because through the body we engage the energy body. So far from traditional tantra for the moment. But as you may have noticed, the word sex does not appear in here. And indeed, the question of sex is, of sexual energy, is one that was, you know, what we are practicing today, Neo-Tantra, puts that center stage. And it's important to know that this idea is something that mainly came into tantric practice in the 20th century. So for those of you versed in psychology, you know, psychotherapy, you know, from the, let's say, it started with something like Wilhelm Reich and therapists like that, the 40s, 50s, then within the New Age movement, like from the 60s, 70s, the idea that sexual energy is something that needs to be freed in our body in order to really work with it. So the idea that our sexual energy is not free. We are not in our natural state. And that's, of course, that's super easy to understand, because, you know, each one of us, how much have we been conditioned by society? They want us to do sex in a certain way, not in the other. By our families, by our biography.
I just want to go back a step.
Yes.
Because I want to really talk about the birth of Neo-Tantra.
Yes. Yeah.
And for me, you know, one of the sources of that was the Osho movement, which started in India in the 70s, early 80s.
70s, yeah.
And Osho for me was sort of like a modern day mystic, incredibly well read. And I feel like he established the foundations of Neo-Tantra, predominantly for a heterosexual market, starting with his ashram in India, moving to Oregon. If any of you have a Netflix subscription, I encourage you to watch Wild Country.
Don't watch it. It gives a very skewed.
But for me, what he left us with was two really important things. One was a philosophy that he wrote in his books and through his videos that I find makes this spiritual teaching of Neo-Tantra very accessible to Westerners. And what he also, well, I think actually probably did three things. He also left us with a collection of meditation practices.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think the third thing is that he was the seed, as it were, for many other Tantra teachers, you know, for example, Margot Anand, Art of Sexual Ecstasy. You know, again, for me, that was one of the key foundations of Neo-Tantra. And Neo-Tantra was of its time when it was born. And I want to talk a little bit about why it's relevant to men who love men in 2024 in a moment. But for me, it was of its time because it was revolutionary. You know, at that time, sex and sexual energy, sex only happened within marriage. Sex kind of wasn't free. Okay, we had the 70s, free love. And I think like Tantra was kind of the next stage on, mm-hmm. because it was great to have free love and free sex. But then there was also, well, so what do we do with that?
Yeah.
And I think that's where, you know, at the same time was the birth of the New Age movement, mm-hmm. and New Age different practices. As we move into the 80s, people are talking crystals, angels. And I think, Neo-Tantra or Tantra as its short form kind of borrowed its roots from original Tantra, but I think has established itself in with many modern day practices.
Yes, exactly. And I would say, you know, what Osho did was actually, in my mind, like no one else, he brought East and West together.
Yes.
So the idea that we need to work with sexual energies to reach, you know, to reach psychological healing, mm-hmm. to reach our full potential, to mm-hmm. reach mental sanity, mm-hmm. and that you find already a few decades earlier, you know, with Wilhelm Reich, with general, you find that in all of these modalities of body oriented, you know, psychotherapy,
yeah.
some of which are part of psychotherapy today, some of which are more new agey.
Mm.
But what he did, Osho, was to bring those together with, Eastern meditative ideas, parts of which were from Tantra.
Although,
and bringing that together,
yes.
to say we need to liberate our sexual energy in order to reach meditation.
But I
that
think,
was the thing.
But I think also another way of reframing that,
mm-hmm.
is that he brought the spirituality to a freedom of sex.
Yeah, or that, you know, these things somehow fused, and the idea behind there is, I think he even said that somewhere, is in particular the Western, in our Western psyche, we are so conditioned.
Mm.
In so many ways that we can't even dream of reaching solid states of meditation. The only thing we will see in there is the tortures of our mind. In order to basically bypass that, we need to work with the body.
Mm-hmm.
And the most powerful force in our body is sexual energy.
Mm.
But unluckily, it's also the most conditioned force. The most distorted force.
So if we then wind the clock forward, if that was sort of like Tantra of the 80s and 90s, and I would say when we first started teaching Tantra 18 years ago, very much the model of teaching Tantra was just throw everybody in, chuck them off a cliff, and kind of get on with it. And I think what we've seen develop, thankfully, one is, I think in the last 20 years, we have a much greater understanding of gender and different ways that people can express themselves or have identity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one thing that I've seen. And another thing that I've seen is an understanding of trauma, thankfully. So rather than the model of just chuck everybody off a cliff 20 years ago, we now understand that there's, you know, people have been through a lot in their lives. And typically, people come to Tantra because they're looking for answers. They're looking to work on something. They're looking to grow. They're looking to transform. And Tantra, for me, is an amazing vehicle for that. But equally, you know, in a workshop of people, there's going to be a lot of trauma that's happened to people. And what I've really appreciated and enjoyed is how, you know, there's very much this word now, trauma informed, isn't there? And but what it means is, okay, we acknowledge that there's things that are going to get in the way for people of experiencing this bliss, this divinity, this freedom. Like for me, one of the things Tantra is trying to do is to show you who you really are, like your soul, beyond or before any conditioning, before any identity. Like when we talk about bliss and we talk about the divine and we talk about the soul, these are ways of describing ourselves or seeing ourselves before we come into human form. And for me, a key component of sexual energy is that is a very easy way for us to access those states through our sexual energy. Like when you're in your sex, when you're in your sexual energy, half of it could be that you're in your purest form, your most unconditioned form, or what it's also showing you is actually how far away from that you are. It kind of shows you both.
Yeah, there are actually two things in what you said. And let me just go back to what you started with to basically almost like complete that question of neo-tantra. Because so, as you said rightly, there was this, you know, thing called Pune One, this Osho ashram in a certain period in the 1970s, before all of these, before it went pear-shaped, basically, in Oregon, which is depicted in Wild Wild Country and so on. But there, Osho, who, as you said, was possibly like very, very few other, you know, people in the 20th century or gurus in the 20th century, was incredibly well read and practiced in all of, let's say, mystical practices of the different traditions. Also in the West, but mainly of the East, you know, you name it, you know, Tantra, Zen, different practice from different Hindu religions, Buddhism, things like that. And what he did is he invited lots of really talented psychotherapists, mainly body-oriented psychotherapists from the West, to basically create a laboratory bring this together. And he said, you know, Tantra is the thing that this is almost like called, or he put that center stage, because he said what's coming together here is meditation and body psychotherapy and the liberation of sexual energy. But as you just said, when you look into what they actually practiced,
experimental, it was a good
raw
word.
Well, it was raw. It was very experimental. It was
ethical?
Sometimes
ethical.
Well, I think at that time there wasn't that much an understanding yet of how to work in a trauma-informed way and things like that. This came only very much later. And also, it was very hetero.
Yes,
you know, man, woman.
Yes,
And what you then see is in the generation afterwards, so many neo-tantra teachers who are actually directly or indirectly like inspired by that, and they then brought that more into, you know, into a better understanding of gender, a better understanding of that it's not just hetero, but I remember when we started up still, you know, you and me, we had to translate many of those exercises and rituals that they came up with there. We had almost to translate these from man-woman into a, for us, into a gay kind of perspective and into a gay practice.
Yeah. For me, I want to go back to when I was 18.
Yeah.
because I think that's the first recollection I have of understanding what spirituality was. I felt the calling of spirituality. For me, I was brought up in the West Country of England, in Glastonbury. For me, with my mother, was a day out trip of buying crystals and going and buying tarot cards and incense sticks and wandering around, you know, the spiritual meditation gardens of Glastonbury and just being in the energy, being in the space. That for me was the beginning of an awakening of wanting to be something more, or a calling, or actually I would actually reframe it as a remembering mm-hmm. of being spiritual. But what I didn't have at that time was like a vehicle or a practice yeah. to be able to realize that. So like over that decade of my sort of like 18 through my 20s, I kept feeling a call to be spiritual. And I think when I was about 20s, there was this thing called the National Federation of Spiritual Healers.
Oh, God.
And I was there, the only gay one in a group of many middle-aged, beautiful women with twin set pearls on. And that's where I learned a lot about energy. I learned a lot about healing. This shows you how old I am. This is even before Reiki. Reiki became fashionable. Kind of, I was, you know, three, four years earlier in spiritual healing.
But can I ask you a question yes. there?
Yes.
Because later you ended up in Neo-Tantra and it yes. revolutionized your life. So,
well, this is the point I was getting to.
Did you feel disembodied in your spiritual practice during that time? Or?
Well, for me then, as a gay man in my 20s, yeah. what was completely separated, and this is bringing me on to my point, was my sex and yes. sexuality mm-hmm. was completely separate and devoid from my spirituality. The idea or the notion that these two could sit together center stage. So as I went through my 20s, I had lots of unsatisfactory, mm-hmm. not great sexual experiences. And also, you know, and again, we'll probably talk about this in a later episode, I had a lot of childhood trauma mm-hmm. around sexual abuse. Sex was used as a way to control me throughout my childhood. And so sex in my 20s was confused. It was difficult. It was just painful. And I don't mean physically, I mean emotionally. It was confusing. And, you know, when you're 20, in your 20s, your sexual energy is such a fierce energy. Mm-hmm. It's so really fierce that it kind of controls you and almost drives you crazy at times. And, you know, knowing how to kind of ride that bull, as it were, in a way that felt good was often not great and not easy. Mm-hmm. So the point I'm coming on to, boom, boom, or not coming on to, because that's what people think about Tantra. How did we get, isn't Tantra about not coming? And we'll talk about that in another podcast.
Episode, yeah.
But for me, at the age of, I think in my mid-30s, when I met the idea of Tantra, it was completely revelationary that I was like just dumbstruck that I now had a vehicle for everything I'd learned in my spirituality could happen in my sexuality. For me, you know, we have worked mm-hmm. with men who love men, I think over 16,000 students over 18 years at this point of recording. And I think for men who love men, sex can either be completely amazing and completely take them into their spirituality. But equally, I think a lot of us carry a lot of issues around sex and around our sexual expression. And I think that, you know, for me, there's two key reasons for that. But I think we carry a lot of shame because it's not been okay for us as men who love men or gay men to really show ourselves in our true sexual energy, to allow ourselves to be witnessed and to be seen. I grew up in a time where being gay was not a welcome piece of news. You know, being brought up in the UK, I look at gay men on television at that time, people like Larry Grayson, and it was all limp-wristed, talking camp, like, oh, hello, you know, and all of that. And that was my only identity as a gay person, you know, and there were words like pufta and, you know, in for the American ones, fag, there were all these derogatory terms and all these ways that these gay men were representing themselves in television. And, you know, for me, I talk about how in the 1980s, when Channel 4 brought out a program, it was before they made the US version, it was Queer as Folk. That for me was the moment that gay became mainstream, gay became popular, and gay became acceptable and something that people wanted to be associated with, is when it became socially acceptable. But I still feel that our sexuality is still a part of us as a community that needs healing, that needs to be explored. I think as men who love men, we have found probably every possible way to be sexual with each other in so many different ways. And I think the bit that we are bringing is making that something divine, making that something sacred, making that something about being on a journey, a spiritual journey towards awakening. Sorry, and I just need to say a little bit more. For me, when we are in our sexual energy, we are at our freest. We are, you know, when we've let go of our shame, when you're climbing the walls, you know, it's really interesting when you're reaching for an orgasm, typically we're crying out for God at this point. You know, that feeling of like, oh God. And, you know, we're crying out for God in that moment. And for me, that is where we're in our purest form, our most unfiltered form, in a way that we're really there in our humanity.
I really liked what you said earlier, and I want to come back to that, which is, you know, your own experience of how the way how you were being conditioned as a sexual being, how your sex was somehow limited, maybe distorted, beset with shame, with all these kinds of feelings where it wasn't free. And you described that in, you know, from the way that British society was, you know, and then with the early gay movement, late 80s or something like that. And I loved hearing you say how you find that how you found that limiting.
Yes.
And in a very different, you know, in a very different way at that.
Is this the time? Is this the moment to reveal that you're German? Have you said that to
anybody
yet?
Yes.
Have we should we reveal that?
I think everyone knows, but I wasn't going to talk about this. No, but I was going to say that my conditioning was different, but it reflected German small town society in that time. But what I wanted to say in general is that this sexual conditioning, being limited in our sexual expression, not being free in that, it's almost like a universal experience, and specifically also for us as gay men. I mean, every person we had worked with, I have, at least in beginners, very, very rarely seen people who are really free in their sexual expression.
Completely.
And we have been, you know, if you look at the different layers and the different generations also of the gay community, we have been through so much stuff, especially, you know, we have worked so much with people who have lived through the HIV crisis, for whom, you know, there's this very specific kind of conditioning and trauma in there. And others we have worked with, I've encountered that in America specifically, and in the US, where this kind of, this very, very harsh religious trauma, especially growing up in certain regions of the US. And so this is what I'm saying, is that this is a very lived experience for everyone. And then the question, and then this I think is the attractive thing in Tantra or in Neo-Tantra, is that what if I could move beyond that? What if I could move beyond that and truly free my sexual expression? And as you say, some of those conditionings are super harsh. Mm-hmm. They are traumatic. So there's a lot to be worked through, right? There's the bliss, but also, you know, you will be confronted in this practice with what is holding you back and how can you work through that.
So I think this brings us back to
yeah.
the beginning of this question around why is sexual energy mm-hmm. a key component or a key part of the practices of Neo-Tantra? And for me, it's for two reasons. One, when you are fully surrendered into your sexual energy, whether that's on your own, with another person, other persons, or in a group, or in a coach, when you're completely surrendered, there is a bliss, there is a divinity. And I also just want to briefly talk here about the spirituality of sexual energy, because I've also sometimes thought, and again, we'll talk about orgasm another time, but the natural state of the universe is bliss. And I think as humans, when we're so busy being conditioned and, you know, being in our egos and identities in our, I want to say small lives, and I don't mean that in any judgmental way, that actually there's something universal about the state of bliss. And I perceive that our sexual energy is the gift that creation gave us, whatever we believe in, the gift that creation gave us to remind us who we really are. And it's really interesting that it's a really creative energy. You know, you look how humans are produced. It's through this state of divinity. It's through this state of bliss. And, you know, as a gay man, as a man who loves men, when I'm in my sexual energy, I'm reminded of who I truly am at my source, which is blissful, which is ecstatic, which is joyful. So for me, if that is the spiritual state that all spiritual practices are trying to take us to, like when you think about all spiritual practices, they're all, you know, whether you're doing meditation, whether you're doing yoga, whether you're doing any form of spiritual practice, they're all trying to take you back to this state of bliss, this state of remembering who you really are beyond your conditioning. And for me, the second reason why sexual energy is a key part of the practice of Tantra is because it shows you everything that gets in the way. It shows you where you may feel shame. Maybe shame about how you look, shame about how old you are, shame about who you are. You know, we carry so much shame and guilt in so many different ways, at so many insidious layers. And part of the tantric practice for me is the undoing of all of those things to come back as a free, beautiful human being. Not that you weren't beautiful with your conditioning, but, you know, Ingo.
Yeah, wow, there are so many things in, you know, so many things to discuss in what you said. Probably going to be another podcast. First, I want to put a caveat into there.
Okay.
The bliss is not the destination. The destination is way beyond bliss.
I agree.
And we haven't even started to talk about...
Well, but could we just say, agree, that it's one of the stations on the road of a spiritual journey?
Oh, yes. And it's both station and side effect and many and doorway
yes.
and many other things. And it's, let's say, this is why we usually say, you know, but why we usually talk about bliss so much is this is usually what people can still imagine, aspire to. Mm. It gives you faith. Yeah, this is something worth aspiring to if they have tasted this.
Yeah.
And then you get into this practice and you make it, you work with it, you make it part of your life. Mm. But then at some point you realize that that which this is all about is even beyond that. Mm. And it becomes, but there is where words start to fail. And it's very hard to. But we're gonna have, you know, podcasts about that. That's the first thing I wanted to say. And mm-hmm. I need to say one more thing.
Do it.
because we haven't even, coming back to our question of this podcast, I haven't even started to really go into detail of how sexual energy, you know, exactly how sexual energy worked with it properly in a tantric way mm-hmm. can elicit these doorways mm-hmm. into bliss and then into awakening. Mm-hmm. Because there are whole, batteries of techniques and of theory in there. Just to mention a few things, I'm going to talk about that later, but, you know, this is how to bring sexual energy up.
Mm-hmm.
Then once the sexual energy is being brought up in your body, what does it do in your body? And mm-hmm. there I mentioned spiritual physiology.
Mm-hmm.
There are many, many things then that happen and that you can work with sexual energy in spiritual physiology to elicit certain states that mm-hmm. then again lead into something. And this would be possibly several podcasts. So we have asked ourselves a very, very, very big question today. You know, I just wanted to open for yes. you, dear listener, if yes. you're not familiar with this, the vastness uh-huh. of this. Once you start waking up sexual energy and to connect that with spiritual physiology, you are in for a ride and,
yes.
and to really work with that. And we haven't even talked about that yet.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We are out of time on this topic.
Exactly. Wow.
Any last statement to say on that?
No, to be continued.
To be right. continued.
To be continued.
Okay.
We can only really scratch the surface of all of these topics. Also the whole Tantra versus Neo-Tantra thing.
Uh-huh.
The whole spiritual physiology thing and mm-hmm. the whole question of sexual energy, of the conditioning of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, each of these actually would, in my mind, deserve two or three podcasts.
Okay, I am sure over our time of doing this, we're gonna cover that. So listen, are you ready to move on to the next part?
Yes.
So in this podcast, what we also wanted to do was to bring you a gift each time. And in previous episodes, we've talked about ways to start your own tantric practice at home. And last time, we talked about self-pleasuring practice. And then the previous podcast, we talked about the app community.tantraforgaymen.com. And today our gift for you is, you know, what books should you read about Tantra? And Ingo, you were going to come with one suggestion. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I was going to, especially if you're new to this, to start at the very beginning,
mm-hmm.
almost basic. This is a book that is not very spiritual,
mm-hmm.
But more practical.
Okay.
But it's a foundation
mm-hmm.
of many things. And it's The Multi-Orgasmic Man
uh-huh.
by Mantak Chia with his co-author, Douglas Abram.
Okay.
And that book is the ideal book. If you have never done any of it,
mm-hmm.
start reading that and try out the techniques.
Mm-hmm.
It's mostly technique.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's nothing much spiritual in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing much about Tantra in the more narrow sense mm-hmm. in there. But what it gives you is very hands-on, practical suggestions,
yeah.
Practical exercises for yourself at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't need a partner for that.
Mm-hmm.
To how to work with your orgasmic state
mm-hmm.
when you are highly sexually aroused,
mm-hmm.
and how to transform that into states of orgasm that are not just, you know, seconds to minutes long or something like that, but that are much, much more sustained, much longer.
Mm.
And the reason why this is like basic foundational practice is that this is something, as a man specifically, you want to master
mm-hmm.
at a very early stage mm-hmm. in Tantra. Because, you know, when we talk about this first step, let's bring sexual energy up
mm-hmm.
to then work through your body, to then mm-hmm. elicit these spiritual experiences.
Mm.
When we talk about the sexual energy, you know, we are talking about a multi-orgasmic energy.
Mm.
We are not talking about, let's say, you know, coming and then we are talking about something where you can sustain this very state of very, very mm. high arousal
mm.
for a long time. And that needs to be practiced.
Mm-hmm. It does.
And Mantak Chia, who comes from a Taoist tradition,
mm-hmm.
He describes that in a very, very accessible way, something just to play with. Mantak Chia with this co-author, Douglas Abrams, The Multi-Orgasmic Man.
And that's your first that's your recommendation of where to start reading.
Where to start reading when you are, if you are a very, very, very beginner.
Okay.
In Tantra. Many of, you know, many of our more advanced students that they will have done that over and over again. But this, you know, this one is specifically for you. If you're interested in Tantra, you want to do something, you haven't got a clue where to begin. Try this.
And we should also say this is not a paid recommendation. It's just of one of our first natural recommendations.
We don't have any affiliate links or anything. You know, Google it, put it into Amazon, order it. Okay. Yeah.
Cool.
I recommend it.
Thank you. And the last bit to talk about in today's podcast is our beloved Tantra Love Festival. It's Saturday, the 24th of August through to Wednesday, the 28th. We're about two-thirds sold out, approaching two-thirds sold out. Up to 130 men coming internationally to Glastonbury in the UK.
It's in Glastonbury, southwest of the UK. If you're coming from elsewhere, America, it's accessible in a few hours from Heathrow.
It is. And also, whilst we're talking, do you remember, Ingo? Because I have been busily preparing and working with new facilitators and programming. So do you remember any of the workshops that we've got coming up? Let's see if we can do a little bit of workshop bingo or badminton back. So one of the things I know is happening is we're going to be doing the ice bath challenge. Ice baths seem to be a big thing at the moment.
Wait a moment. Before you start with that.
Yes.
I think what our listeners want to hear is...
They don't want to hear about an ice bath challenge?
No, they want to first hear about... It's a Tantra festival, darling.
It is.
It's a Tantra Love Festival.
Love.
So what tantric workshops do we have in there? What do we start with in terms of tantric workshops?
So you tell me, see if you read my emails that I sent you. What I do know is we have beautiful Luke's coming from Washington, D.C. And one of the workshops he's going to be doing is something called impact play. And that's a way to start playing with sensations in your body. So, you know, you'll hear Ingo and I talking about different sensations. And he, in one of his workshops, is going to help you experience things. Maybe a little bit provocative, just a sprinkling of provocative. Impact play is kind of one of the juicy workshops.
Yes. But I want to bring you back to we've been talking about multiple orgasms. We've been talking about sexual energy.
Yes. Do you remember any of those?
What are those workshops?
Do you remember the list I gave you? So what I do know is that we've got Firefly coming. And we've got Pink coming, and they are both going to be doing a different combinations of tantric massage workshops. And also Pink is going to be doing our famous Cock Lab workshop, which is a way to explore in detail different cock strokes, different techniques, different practices. I am going to be doing a love explosion ritual, which is about ways of really deeply, profoundly, with open hearts. We've got over 40 workshops, it would be fair to say.
Of these 40 workshops, possibly about half are like very, very, you know,
tantric.
Directly neo-tantric practices. It starts with how can you deeply connect to a partner? Emotionally.
Yes.
Physically.
Yes.
How can you be free in your sexual expression whilst being true to yourself and to your boundaries?
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, we're going to move into things like touch. How can you give touch? How can you receive touch? Mm-hmm. And then it gets ramped up into things like massage, and it gets more and more erotic.
Mm-hmm.
Reaching very erotic workshops such as the Cock Lab that you mentioned, such as classical tantric massage, and it gets as juicy as it sounds. And The other half of the workshops, as you say, they are workshops that are that you know a little bit wider than just only Tantra, because on a festival you just want to have fun
and celebrate and have the best time ever.
So we do, you know, we do workshops with that more have more of a party mode and music
and dance and also on the last night we are co-creating a beautiful sacred puja, yeah, tantric ritual ceremony, and our aim is that touches the petals of your heart, that you just smile and remember being loved and being in your body.
That's one more thing.
Uh-huh.
We pride ourselves in this festival,
yeah,
that, you know, imagine 130 people, uh-huh, and many people are gonna ask, oh God, can I come on my own? I don't even know someone there.
Mm-hmm.
And what we hear again and again in people's experience, and what we pride ourselves to do, we have set it up in a way that usually after 24, 36 hours, everyone knows everyone.
Mm,
people have shared deep stuff from their lives.
Yes.
And it feels like a group of friends that you have known for a very long time in a very intimate way. And that's what then makes it possible to really go into Tantra.
So that is the Tantra Love Festival. We haven't done it, probably even begun to do it justice, but we'll be talking about it more at the end of our future podcast. So that's the Tantra Love Festival, Saturday the 24th to Wednesday the 28th of August in Glastonbury. Details of that are on our website, tantra4gaymen.com. Ingo, it's been beautiful to share this with you.
Absolutely.
Thank you for being with me in this. I love you. And
I love you too.
See you in our next episode. Take care,
sweet
baby.
See you in our next episode.
Bye, sweetheart. Bye-bye. So I hope you've enjoyed the episode 3 of the Tantra for Gay Men podcast. Hopefully, Ingo and I have done justice to the topic about why is sexual energy a real key focus in the practice of Neo-Tantra. Ingo also talked about his book recommendation, and we talked a little bit about the Tantra Love Festival as well. Coming in episode 4, we're going to be talking about a common problem that people have around, I can't make sound during sex. I can't make sound during sex. And we're going to offer some different perspectives and ideas around that. Why, you know, you may wish to choose that, what might get in the way, and some helpful suggestions and ideas around that. Look forward to seeing you on the next episode. Take care. Lots of love. Bye-bye.